Welcome to our Indirect Tax Insights podcast. My name is Bipin Sapla, and I lead the Indirect Tax and Economic Policy at EY India. Today, I'll be your host for this episode, and we'll be delving into the intricacies of taxation of gift cards or vouchers. Joining us today is Jayashree Parthasarathy, a seasoned tax consultant and a very seasoned tax partner at EY India, leading our knowledge and solutions vertical. She has close to 25 years of experience in the field, and both me and Jayashree have worked together on a number of advocacy assignments and have worked on this, in case of the voucher industry, representing their issues for the last two and a half years, bring out this circular, bring out these changes and amendments, which would help industry pay the tax, the right amount of taxes, or bring about clarity in the way these issues are going to be taxed.
Thank you so much, Bipin, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and discuss a topic that's very close to my heart with our listeners today.
Let's set the stage by understanding the background of this issue, Jayashree. Historically, vouchers have not been taxable when they are issued. Tax is levied at the stage of redemption, basis the goods, services redeemed. That was the practice which was being followed in the service tax regime. And globally also, that's the practice which is followed, unless in some jurisdictions where some specific laws have been made to tax these vouchers. The voucher industry, however, had to lobby hard for certain clarifications to be issued with respect to its taxation. So what has been the controversy and changes, clarifications brought in to tackle the same? Jayashree, I want you to elaborate the issue which is there at hand and what has been the effort to bring about this clarification.
Sure, Bipin. Thanks for setting the context. So taking a step back, historically under the pre-GST regime, Bipin, if we were to look at it, vouchers were pretty much treated as what we would call akin to an actionable claim, basically an instrument which allows you to redeem certain goods or services. Today, if we look at vouchers as a concept or gift cards as a concept, we're probably familiar with what we called gift prepaid instruments, which are essentially RBI-regulated instruments that can be used in lieu of cash or credit to buy goods or services. Some of these gift PPIs are regulated by the RBI, others are not, but essentially what they do is they allow you to go and buy goods or services by using them almost like a currency. So far, the controversy really under GST has been, are we meant to treat these vouchers themselves as goods or as services? Or can we take a position that these are effectively like money or actionable claims and therefore not liable? In that context, we've had the good fortune of having certain high court rulings which have come in to clarify that the cards themselves or the vouchers themselves are not really goods, rendering them liable to be taxed. The largest of the issues really has been when a distributor or an issuer or a reseller trades or supplies these vouchers or gift PPIs, as we call them, on a principal-to-principal basis and earns a trading margin. Is that margin supposed to be offered to GST almost like a commission? That's been the largest of the issues the industry has been grappling with on account of certain ongoing investigations, disputes and demands, etc. And the third of the issues really has been what should be the correct and appropriate tax treatment of breakage, which is nothing but income that gets recognized by the issuer of the gift cards or the PPIs to the extent of the unredeemed portion of the gift card itself, which again gets recognized belatedly basis RBI mandate. But the dispute arose as to whether this recognition of income itself renders it to be a supply liable to GST. So in summary, are gift cards themselves taxable as goods? Second, is the margin earned on trading of gift cards taxable? as a taxable supply, and third is recognition of breakage income taxable. These were largely the controversies that the industry was trying to get resolved for themselves.
Thank you, Jayashree, for explaining the how the vouchers work and what were the issues around the vouchers which prompted the advocacy and representation with the GST Council. Can I now ask you to explain to our listeners as to what were the issues, what the circular which has been issued, and how does it take care of the taxation of vouchers and the various types of vouchers, which is the P2P and the P2A vouchers, their taxability?
So maybe I'll take your first question first in terms of the fact that the industry itself operates under two different and distinct models. One, like I mentioned earlier, we have a P2P model where there is a buy-sell of the voucher, and each intermediary in the transaction, who's usually a reseller, earns a trading margin. The controversy really has been whether this trading margin needs to be offered to GST. And typically, if you look at the base principles, Bipin, we're all familiar that under GST, we have, you know, exempt supplies, non-taxable supplies, which means that a particular product or a service may be exempt or not taxable because it's not under GST. And we don't really have a mechanism under the GST law to just carve out the margin earned and tax it. The base principle really being that if something is not taxable, then, you know, any income earned out of that, whether as a trade margin or a discount or by any other name, should ordinarily not be taxable. And it's good to note that the circular really articulates that principle to call out that in a P2P arrangement where there's a buy-sell of vouchers, because the vouchers themselves are not taxable till they are redeemed, anything earned out of that distribution on that buy-sell as a trade margin should not be taxable. And that, to my mind, is the right position as well. And rightly so, the circular goes on to clarify that if the commercial arrangement and contractual obligations between the parties are such that there is a distribution service that is rendered in the capacity of, let's say, a sales agent, then to that extent, the commission earned on that distribution service needs to be offered to tax, which again has largely been the way in which the industry has been operating as well. To summarize and simplify, a P2P trade margin is not liable, just as it is not liable with respect to exempt supplies. Whereas if it is a commission I'm earning on the distribution of an exempted product or service, I would need to pay GST, and that principle will equally apply to vouchers as well.
Great, Jayashree. So we understand how the taxation on vouchers has been clarified by the board and how this will set to rest the issues which were there, which you had explained earlier. Can you now explain how the taxation of breakage income would work, and how the clarification which has now been issued will take care of the issues around taxation of breakage income?
Now, moving to the larger issue of breakage. Now, breakage effectively is an accounting entry which issuing companies of vouchers pass when the voucher or a part of it remains unredeemed. So when a voucher is typically issued, Bipin, as you're aware, the companies will pass an entry recognizing a liability impending the redemption of that voucher. When the redemption doesn't happen, that liability will need to be reversed, and therefore from an accounting standpoint, an income is recognized. But this does not mean that there's a supply which has happened. In fact, breakage income effectively is earned only when there is no supply, no redemption, no article or goods or services being supplied. So again, rightly so, the circular goes on to clarify to say that in the absence of a supply, in the absence of a redemption, mere recognition of an income by way of an accounting entry, which is called breakage in industry terms, should not be taxable. And if you look at the principles that the circular articulates, it's broadly aligned with how most international jurisdictions, save certain exceptions, also treat breakage income, also treat margin, commission, etc. So overall, I would say it's a much welcome circular which provides a lot of clarity and certainty with respect to tax treatment of vouchers.
Thanks, Jayashree, for explaining the circular which has been issued by the GST Council. What the GST Council has also done is that they have gone ahead and amended the law to delete provisions that seek to differentiate the time of taxation of general vouchers and specific vouchers. Can you explain to our listeners what are general and specific vouchers and how they have been treated till now by the GST law?
Right, it's a very interesting and a good question, Bipin. The easiest and simplest example of a general voucher would be a voucher which at the time of issuance, neither the supplier nor the recipient knows what is going to be redeemed, how and where. Easy example, let's say a voucher that an e-commerce portal issues, which is redeemable against any goods or any services listed on the portal supplied by multiple different vendors. A different example could be, let's say, a brand which deals with multiple products, and at the time of issuance, there's no visibility on what product will be redeemed against the voucher. A more nuanced example could be, let's say, a jewelry store brand which deals in gold jewelry issues a voucher which the customer can redeem against any store pan-India across any location. Here again, while there's visibility on the product, there's no visibility on where the voucher will be redeemed and what, therefore, the place of supply will be. So these are all typically treated as general vouchers, and so far, from a time of supply standpoint, tax would not apply at the stage of issuance. It gets a little more complicated where we have, you know, vouchers issued by companies, let's say, like OTT platforms, which have a single GST registration. So you know who the supplier is or where the supply is from. You know what the product is, which is entertainment or a TV package. But what we don't know is where it's going to be redeemed. So these two, to my mind, ordinarily should be treated as a general voucher because we don't know where the place of supply or redemption is really going to be. But some of these were causing a bit of a confusion, given that a lot of parameters of the supply were known upfront at the time of issuance, and there was a bit of divergence in the industry practice as well. That perhaps, Bipin, is a reason why the government thought it fit to relook at the categorization of vouchers themselves as between general and specific. Now, coming to a specific voucher, perhaps the simplest example is, you know, a voucher which is spa or a salon around the corner from my house would issue to me for a specific treatment. There I know everything. I know who is the issuer. We know that it's going to be a particular type of service which is taxable at a particular rate, which will only be available at that particular location. So this we can definitely treat as a specific voucher, and the right tax treatment is for tax to be paid at the time of issuance as well. Bipin, I'll now come to your question on did we really need this kind of an amendment? I guess the government was looking to not create further disputes and controversy on whether a particular voucher is a general one, specific one, is it taxable at the stage of issuance, redemption, across the chain, etc. So that extent, I feel that the proposed amendment, which seeks to do away with the differentiation between general and specific vouchers, is a good one. It will bring in a lot of clarity and certainty to transaction, where the entire industry will now know that tax is to be paid only at the stage of redemption, irrespective of the type of voucher. And I guess the government has recognized a very important principle, which is to say that, you know, tax will anyway get paid. It's only a timing issue. And timing issue ideally should not cause disputes with respect to when tax is to be paid. And it kind of mitigates unwarranted disputes. So to that extent, Bipin, I feel it's a very proactive and a good move from the government's part, while effectively India is taking a slightly different position from most of the other countries, which continue to have specific vouchers being taxed at the time of issuance and general vouchers only at the stage of redemption.
Thank you, Jayashree. Thank you for explaining this so lucidly for the listeners. Do you see any flip side to it?
Again, a great question. See, I think if we go back to the clarification, it's clearly saying P2P not taxable at all, P2A is taxable. So I think the first thing a lot of businesses looking at vouchers issuance or distribution really need to do is relook at their contractual arrangements to ensure that there are clear delineations between any P2P arrangements they have and P2A arrangements they have. Because the government as well, I'm sure, will be closely looking at the contractual agreements, roles and responsibilities, terms and conditions, to really try and see whether the arrangement is P2P for a full exemption to be availed or a full non-taxation to be availed, to put it differently, or whether it's more like a P2A where at least the commission needs to be offered to tax. The second point really is, I mentioned that there has been divergence in practice where some companies have been paying tax on specific vouchers through every point in supply. They will probably need to relook at, you know, how their compliance happens, their tax processes happens with respect to the end point retail outlet alone now probably charging a tax, with tax not being charged on every supply. And the last, of course, is, you know, it's great when there is a clarification which says that something is not taxable. But on the flip side, I think it becomes important to also then analyze what restrictions, if any, come by with respect to some of these companies who are engaged in the business of distribution of vouchers on the input credit side. Today, we really don't have a provision in the GST law which restricts credits for actionable claims as such. And the circular thankfully calls out vouchers to either be money or actionable claims. But that's again something that I guess business will really need to look at and gear up for from a input tax credit scrutiny standpoint. So these are some of the issues, I guess, Bipin, which remain. But I guess we should definitely be thankful for the larger issues of taxation having been resolved through the circular as well as the amendment.
That's great insight, Jayashree. Thank you for sharing your expertise with us today.
My pleasure, Bipin. Thanks for having me. And I hope, you know, the discussion was interesting as well as insightful for you.
It indeed was, Jayashree. And a big thanks to our listeners for tuning in to this episode of the IDT Insights podcast. We hope you found this discussion useful and enlightening. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast for more insights on indirect taxations. Until next time, I'm Bipin Sapta, signing off from this edition. Thank you.